Welcome back, everybody. This is Night Flight. I'm Judith Kober, and today we have James Bartley with us. I'm very happy to have him back. We have to cover a lot of ground and a lot of catch-up to do. So without further ado, James, thank you for coming, and thank you for being back.
Thank you, Judith. It's a pleasure to be here. I really appreciate the opportunity.
So, James, what's going on? I mean, I really would like to have your point of view on that. And we had this 1-2 punch with first the COVID, then the riots. I don't know how it is in your country. Are you seeing statues being torn down as well, or is it a little bit calmer?
Excuse me. There has been black on white violence. We've seen horrific videos of a young blonde girl on a Melbourne train viciously attacked by older African women.
Okay.
And when they were punching her, they were hitting her as hard as they can. They don't hold nothing back. Nobody intervened. Of course, it was videotaped because so many people are detached from their own feelings, let alone the feelings of anyone else, that this poor girl who's being brutalized and traumatized, that her feeling, her existence doesn't matter. It's merely a new upload on Instagram or video or something, right? Mm. So we're seeing that in their wisdom, excuse me, the state of Victoria, where Melbourne is, they're talking about going to the next stage, stage 3, and perhaps stage 4 of restrictions, which means no more than 2 people together. Everything shut down again. There's talk about the military being called to assist in the COVID testing and what have you, which in practice probably means going from place to place and getting tests from people. And of course, we know the questionable nature of these tests. Even the World Health Organization and the CDC have talked about how faulty some of these test kits are. But none of that matters because it's all one big gaslighting operation. Mm. So on the one hand, that's starting up again. The panic buying has ensued. People are buying the toilet paper up again. They're talking about closing the borders. And these things really do work in sync with one another. As you know, Judy, the COVID restrictions on the one hand, and the Bolshevik uprising on the other, for lack of a better term. And there's built-in inconsistencies also. The leaders of these black Somali gangs have been told they're going to be released. And the black leaders have already announced that they will go on a rampage in the streets of Melbourne. Mm. But that's okay. They're not violating any COVID restrictions. Mm. I guess they're just expressing their free speech. And we've seen in the past, Judith, when these gangs from Somalia and Sudan and whatnot, when they run amok in the streets of Melbourne and in the suburbs around Melbourne, once again, we're gaslighted by the media and by the police. There's no proof that these flash mobs exist. That's racism. Even though video exists, showing these people running through the streets, causing problems, attacking people, attacking personal property. So it's a combination of this restriction on the one hand. Every normal person, every law-abiding person must adhere to all these restrictions, the social distancing, what have you. And also the Soviet-style shortages we're being accustomed to, because I was at a Kmart a few weeks ago. And even to this day, when we go to some of the larger chains here, supermarket chains, department store chains, half the shelves are empty. That's not an exaggeration. I make a joke saying that they're waiting for another shipment from Wuhan, you know, China, to restock the shelves, right? So they're conditioning us to Soviet-style queues, Soviet-style waiting in line, Soviet-style shortages on the one hand, and yet also this whole Bolshevik potential red terror aspect is starting to ramp up, and the gaslighting from the media on both issues, which are really one issue, is absolutely stunning. The lies are just coming thick and fast now, Judy.
So with that, with shortages, that is not occurring here. Yes, we had it with the toilet paper, of course. And but I had recently, I talked to Stefan Verstappen, and he said, next stop, Hunger Games. And that around Christmas, the entire world will be starving. Do you agree? Can you see that? Or
yes, because the farms, the agricultural system has been grinding slower and slower. Don't be surprised, everyone, in the midst of all this tumult, if in their wisdom, the AFL-CIO of America, which is the biggest, basically, union of American union workers, if they suddenly, in their wisdom, say, well, you know, in sympathy with Black Lives Matter and Antifa, and in the fight against racism, we will call a general strike, okay? Nothing is off the table, as far as I can see, because the AFL-CIO has long been controlled by the Communist Party USA. This goes back to the 40s and 50s. Earl Browder, who was the head of the American Communist Party USA, his son and grandson, I think his grandson is running around doing similar things these days. So if they call a strike, they're going to break the strike. The strike breakers will be out there. Well, the counter strike breakers, for lack of a better term. And they're not necessarily going to be there to keep people from crossing the picket line and working as scabs. I think they're going to be there to keep the union members from working, okay? They want, because everyone, so many jobs and businesses have already been impacted. Some of these businesses, many of them, there's no going back for them. They've already been destroyed. It's a new form of collectivism, Judith, where because these businesses can no longer make their mortgage payments and everything else, they're going under and they're being subsumed, being gobbled up by their creditors, everything essentially going back to the mega banking cartel. And we've also seen the savings, the pension funds, looted once again. Back in 2008, when the derivatives melted down, as they were meant to melt down, in America, they call them 501Ks, basically an insurance fund. But really what they do with, not the insurance, but a pension fund, but what they really do with that money is gamble on the stock market. So overnight in 2008, people lost thousands of dollars. And here in Australia, the equivalent of the 501k in America is called superannuation. And over here, I know people personally, they've lost $50,000. This is their retirement fund. Where is it going? It's going back, I guess, to the parasite bankers who doled it out to us in the first place. So the point of relevance is, I don't think it's beyond their capabilities and their evil to call for a general strike at some point. And that would really cause problems, because getting back to the Hunger Games aspect to it, and folks, it's difficult for us in the Western world to imagine famine on that scale, Ukrainian-style famine, famine in the Sudan, famine in elsewhere around the world. Which it's the Irish famine. All of these were deliberately engineered events to reduce recalcitrant populations, let's say. So we're already starting to see the economy grind down. We're already seeing shortages of key products in society. So if they call a general strike, that's going to move us closer and closer towards a general famine situation, where there's going to be rationing involved, state-sponsored rationing. For a long time in America, they've been going after organic food producers. Excuse me, it's early morning my end here, so I'm still going through my morning, clearing the throat, clearing the lungs routine. I got asthma.
Yeah, but wait, thank you for doing this early bird with me.
Yeah. And so just to round up the point, because I want to hear your thoughts on it, Judy, as well. The for some time now, they've been attacking in America the local food, organic food co-ops. People who want to have non-pasteurized milk, they're being raided. And it's not just local police or sheriff's departments, it's state and federal, right? Now, they have no qualms when people are thrashing businesses and setting fires and attacking people. We're being told none of that is happening. They're all peaceful protests. But for some time now, the infrastructure, the networking, the bartering amongst normal people who want to eat non-processed, non-GMO food, they've been attacked for some time now. So if that is removed out of the equation, then all we're going to have left, for the most part, especially people in the cities, is this processed crap, basically. And even that, we'll start to see shortages there. I hope that doesn't happen. But if history is anything to go by, the forced collectivization of the kulaks, the farmers in Ukraine, the mass starvation that resulted, the famine, cannibalism that came about as a result of the mass famine, you know, there's a lot of predictive programming going on, and your colleague mentioning the Hunger Games, I think that's something to consider at this time.
What I can imagine is that we have already talks here about another lockdown. Yeah. And so what I can imagine is once that is in place, the second lockdown, and I assume that will be pretty much global again. So it might start in one country and then the others are picking up. What I can imagine is that then these delivery chains, you know what I mean? That is disrupted. And of course, that makes it very, very difficult. I'm not saying there will be no food, but there might be two scenarios. It's either there is food there, but it's so expensive that you can't afford it, or the shelves are really empty. Or, you know, both at at the same time, depending on where you are.
Yes, that's quite possible. Also, the possibility that, as with the case of the infamous toilet paper shortage, that I feel that there was a deliberate attempt to, on the part of these department store chains, to clear the shelves of the toilet paper, and then, complicit with the media promoting this notion of panic buying, first in Asia, where we were treated to videotaped spectacles of Asian people going nuts in the stores buying up all the toilet paper, that planted the thought form in people's heads here in Australia about, well, the toilet paper is being bought up. And then lo and behold, we start going to the store. We start noticing the whole aisle is bereft, empty of toilet paper. It's like, mm-hmm. What happened? It just happened overnight. Now, I would like to talk to some of these people that work in the warehousing that are responsible for stocking the shelves. Like, okay, just off the record, what happened with the toilet paper? How come all of a sudden overnight, they all just disappeared? Was that deliberate? Did someone, an order come down to take the toilet paper off the shelves to create the illusion of one of my friends? I think she's in Nevada. Mm. She lives a short distance away from a company that makes toilet paper. That's all they do is make toilet paper. So how come she, a short distance from the company, is having toilet paper issues? Now, this was in phase one. It's the last time. Right. Mm. Now, granted, like you pointed out, there's a distribution chain, right? Mm. But still, there's warehouses. You would think that the toilet paper would make it from point A to point B, but that wasn't the case. And so if we take that as a model, that it's possible, it's a working hypothesis, and I can't prove this at the moment, but the toilet paper was deliberately taken off the shelves to create the illusion of panic buying and shortages. It wouldn't be a stretch to suggest that the powers that be would also say, well, let's take other essential items, foodstuffs, beans, rice, off the shelves as well. Because when we're looking at the collectivization model, especially in the Ukraine back in the 1930s and the 1920s, nothing is... order out of chaos scenario, which we've heard for a long time in this field.
Sorry, you cut out there for a second.
They deliberately set the conditions to create a crisis situation, and then they step in with their ready-made solutions to quell the rioting, to ease the suffering of the people because they care so much about us. The end result is more restrictions, more draconian measures. The draconian measures they're talking about in Australia now are just, they're off the charts. Complete, total control over virtually every aspect of people's lives. Just to combat this coronavirus, and it's questionable just how contagious or how dangerous this thing really is.
Okay, give us an example. What is to be expected if, let's say, you do not wear a mask or you do not?
I think you're frozen. Let's see.
Yeah, you are frozen at my end. Yes, I can hear you, but not right now. And
yeah.
Okay. So we are back. We had a little bit of internet issues. So, yeah, James, you were talking about what type of punishments are there in Australia, please.
Well, from what I read, there will be a $1,600 fine for each instance of violating some of these restrictions. For example, there's a limit now. There is going to be a limit of how many people you can have in your home. So whether it's two people or whatever arbitrary number they come up with, for each instance that people violate these new rules, that's a $1,600 fine. And also, not only you're probably aware at your end, Judy, but they have the COVID-19 tracker application on the phones now. And a lot of these phones, I think some of the Android types, with some of the recent updates, they're automatically downloaded, applications.
Yeah. And they, even if you deactivated them, they activated themselves for Apple.
They will reactivate
Apple Android.
It. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what happened here, because in my state of New South Wales, they were starting to ease the restrictions, okay? Mm-hmm. It's like a yo-yo. Remember, like post 9/11, today is a yellow terror alert. Today is a blue terror alert. We have actionable intelligence. Al-Qaeda is going to strike. So they're playing the emotional strings of the people. Terrorist threat, up, down, yellow, black, sideways. Same thing here. Okay, we're going to ease restrictions. Oh, wait a minute. Because we ease these restrictions, we're having a spike now, right, of cases. So what they're also doing in some of the restaurants that we go to here, since they've eased these restrictions in my state, is you have to give your phone number, your mobile phone number, in case that while we were dining at the restaurant, if there was an outbreak, if one or more people are alleged to have come down with COVID-19, mm-hmm. then they'll be able to contact us. So it's all about, tracing, tracking.
Yeah.
And that is why
I don't go. Here in Germany, you have to register if you go to a beer garden or a restaurant. And you have to give your name, your address, your phone number. So, sorry, guys, you have to eat your food yourself. And you have to drink your beer yourself. I'm not going along with that. I simply will not do it. And if you are going out of business because of that, then I'm very sorry. But you will not track me and register me. Yeah.
No. Yeah.
Same with a hairdresser. Yeah. Everywhere you go, you have to give your address. Mm-mm-mm-mm. No. I'm not going to do that.
Zbigniew Brzezinski, who was, as you know, was Carter's national security advisor and one of the founders of the Trilateral Commission, in his book, Between Two Ages, Technocratic Future, a Technocratic Society or something, he talked about, and he wrote this book years ago, decades ago, but now we're seeing that come to light. The technological ability to track literally everybody. And again, the maddening gaslighting aspect to it, where they have no problems and no qualms tracking people to combat, supposedly, this COVID-19 outbreak. But on the one hand, they have no interest tracking the so-called peaceful protesters when they're openly using social media to coordinate their efforts, when they're openly calling for acts of violence against white people, because there has been an ongoing, some people would argue this, but I can only go by the statements and the actions that have been going on for some time now, that there seems to be this venomous hostility and animus towards white people in general. And it's a process. And I think your listeners and viewers would already know this, but it bears repeating at this time that one of the basic tenets of cultural Marxism and communism is through the grant-making power of the tax-exempt foundations, the Rockefeller Foundation, et cetera, pour billions of dollars and basically re-engineer the school system from kindergarten all the way up, basically use it as a means to brainwash, indoctrinate, and turn people away from their families, the family unit. Oh, it's your parents thought a certain way because they're older. They don't understand today's times. They don't understand digital devices. And so they discredit the parents. It's all part of the effort to destroy the family structure and then hence break down the wider society. And so you have all these young, supple minds indoctrinated with the notion that their families are, their family members and their parents are idiots, that their own history, they're not, not only are they not taught the real history, they're taught to despise their own country. So, and despise their own heritage. Like it or not, folks, North America, yes, they supplanted a native population. We know that. And what happened to the Native Americans was not right. But there is such a thing called, and I'm just being a pragmatist and a realist here, there is such a thing called might makes right. The Roman Empire, numerous civilizations, expansionist, aggressive civilizations and cultures throughout history, ruled over weaker neighbors, weaker tribes. That's history. So in the last 200 or so years, the European culture, the descendants of Europeans, had basically reshaped and engineered North America. So it was essentially a European heritage-based culture. What they have done with this long-term, it's been decades now, cultural Marxism, is not only make all the outward trappings of European history, European descendancy, bad, evil, and racist. They've made it so people of the Caucasian race, which is the predominant race in North America now, has been for some time, to not only loathe themselves and hate themselves, but to have, we saw the same thing happen in Germany, post-World War II. We saw the same thing with the demonization of the Serbs. Whenever the focus and the endless ridicule, that's what Saul Alinsky says in his Rules for Radicals, just endlessly ridicule. Because it's a form of spell casting, Judy, when the media and everything, the bullfrog's chorus of generating hate in the form of words, images, etc., at a certain demographic. Well, now it's turned inward to anyone of a white is automatically suspect. So they've turned away from their European heritage. All the vestiges of European ancestry, the statues of founding fathers are being taken down. We saw this in other communist countries, right? So that's how they destroy the culture from within, is they erase the past. They turn all the students who've gone through, and they work in 15-year incremental phases of gradually changing society to the point where they hate America, There was a black man in his late 80s, probably maybe 90 years old, who was attacked by black youths in a subway in America for the crime, if you will, of wearing a T-shirt with an American flag on it. They knocked him out, and they left him laying bloody on the platform. So it just shows you that the mere symbol of the United States flag is enough to evoke this violent response in countless people. And I would go so far as to say is these people are no longer Americans. Because if to use the arbitrary definitions post 9/11, enemy combatant, let's say, these people are militants. They're enemy combatants in the midst. They're a corrosive, rotten influence, black or white. If they're tearing down statues, if they're attacking businesses, they're attacking people for no reason. These are the communist red brigades. We saw this in the run-up to, you know, 1930s with the communists fighting the Freikorps in the streets of Germany. But there is no Freikorps yet in North America. There is no organized counter-resistance to the communists yet. It's all one-sided. And the people that the useful idiots, many of them that are attacking people and destroying things, I don't even know if they know what communism is or cultural Marxism is. It's just the innate rage that has been within them, that has been fostered and has been amplified by the media, by the cultural Marxist school system, has put them on a boil. And so now the system is telling them, these are your targets, that white person, that white privilege. They're the reason you're in your downtrodden state. Lash out at them. And this is all part of this white genocide, destroy white European culture, destroy European anything to do with the fact that North America, and by extension Australia and great, you know, elsewhere in the Western world, that it has European antecedents. That's all being destroyed now. And what we're seeing in North America had already happened in the UK, had already happened in large parts of the European Union, the unlimited immigration, what have you. The original European culture has just been, is in the process of being dismantled and will be replaced if they succeed, which we're going to do our level best to prevent it from succeeding, into a communist-controlled state where the state is all-powerful and there'll be no dissent, no nothing.
Yeah. So, James, when we look at the coordination of all of this, I was thinking along the lines, is all of that already being planned and done by an AI and everybody is going along with it? Are we already at that point? I mean, we had Sweden that didn't go along, and in East Europe, one country, I forgot the name. Did you think about that, if that is possible, that we are already dealing with an AI-controlled system?
Well, we know that certain computer security firms have already did a game simulation of how to disrupt and essentially cancel the 2020 presidential elections in America, where they determined that if they manipulate the traffic lights, because everything is the Internet of Things now, if they manipulate the traffic lights, if they take over the city buses and have them run over people waiting at the, I'm not laughing because it's funny, I'm laughing because it's insane, run over people at the polling stations, right? And then have paid provocateurs control terrorist assets, cause problems, et cetera, et cetera. They already determined they can disrupt and cancel the 2020 elections for the presidency of the United States. And this was before all this COVID stuff. And I'm sure that the people behind that simulation, it's an Israeli firm called Unit 8200. They're kind of like the NSA equivalent in Israel. And they have close agreements with Lockheed Martin, and hence
essentially have worked their way into a lot of this security systems and computer systems of a lot of these defense corporations in America, and by extension to the military, right? So they did the simulation where they were able to basically disrupt and cancel the presidential elections. Now, we also know that using perhaps similar algorithms and similar models, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and their minions did a simulation back in October or November 2019, where they likely did a game plan scenario of what an outbreak would look like, a global pandemic outbreak. So the concept of utilizing certain models as a means to determine how to alter or gain control of situations and circumstances that would lead to greater societal control worldwide, that's already being done. So it's not a stretch to say, with the ability of AI, with the ability of mechanical thinking, of machine logic, which learns at a geometric progression, right? It's not a stretch to suggest that at some point, maybe we've already reached that point, at some point, an AI program will come in, which will direct the events and just let things take shape in a predetermined manner. Just look how much they've psychologically profiled individuals, societies, the global civilization. They know who out there will go along with these restrictions without any qualms, without any dissent. Who will, not only that, but who will police everyone else? Mm-hmm. You're not wearing a mask. You're standing too close to me, right? There's only supposed to be 6 people in the store at this one time. You have to get out, right? We've been seeing that all across the board, because when people are shunted in that fear portion of the brain, that's the reptilian lizard part of the brain, and as a means to retain control, a lot of these people that had latent control freak tendencies anyway, now they're lashing out as a means to psychologically regain some degree of control. They're policing others. They're snitching on others. They've created a global Stasi state through nothing more than understanding psychology, mass psychology, and manipulating psychology. So if we keep that point in mind, it'd be very easy, I think, to create a machine learning AI program that can control things. Now, we saw the inverse of this in a movie called Eagle Eye, where this AI system ran amok, but the twist was the AI system operated on constitutional principles. So whenever it detected anything that was unconstitutional in society, the system would kick into overdrive, take over everything, and create havoc. So it planted the seed in the minds of all these gullible viewers, oh, the Constitution is bad. If you believe in a Constitution, all chaos will break out, right? So we know that that concept is already in the minds of the people behind the the AI and all the programs. So yes, I see at some point this thing taking on a life of its own, basically, that will not require human intervention. And we already see this with the military, where they've already, in various countries that are already using AI to program their control systems that need little or no human intervention. It makes choices and decisions and moves assets around based on predetermined commands.
Yeah. So are you hopeful that we can turn this thing around, or is it baked in the cake and we practically are going down that road and it will be a very horrible scenario?
Well, the thing about it is any suggestion of any kind of resistance, mm-hmm. as well as armed resistance, will be deemed by this socialist, communist dictatorship as, you know, an act of terror, basically. Notice how the communist regime, any act of dissent was regarded as terrorism, basically, right? Mm. So that point being made, I think as America stands or falls, the rest of the world will stand and fall. And try as they might, they have not been able to eradicate the Second Amendment, the right for citizens to bear arms. The Constitution still stands. What I hope does not happen is, and before I make this point, let me preface it by saying, you will find a large number of people who are constitutionalist minded. If you're going to go by the two-party duopoly system, more Republican, more conservative in their values, in the military and in military families and retired military people. When I worked I worked for Naval Air Forces, U.S. Pacific Fleet, I never met an active duty or recently retired military person who was now working as a contractor. I never met one of them who was a Democrat. Because if one studies what the Democrats call them, communists, call them what they are, right? What they've tried to do for the longest time in America is constantly defund the military, constantly make things difficult for the military. And we're talking about people, you know, enlisted people who are lucky to have, you know, a roof over their heads. And they're talking about reducing the funding for the military, and this will impact on the lives, not only in the training and the equipment, but in the living conditions of these people, right? I'm not talking about the officers necessarily. I'm talking about the soldiers and enlisted people in the ranks. Some of these people have to live on base because they can't afford to live off base. And if they do live off base, they're hanging on a slender thread because they're not getting paid a lot. And here come the Democrats. They always want to reduce the budget of the military. So that fact alone is going to make many people of all ranks in the military, quote unquote, Republican. And the one thing about the two parties, Judy, and we know that both parties are awash in pedophiles. They're awash in Luciferians and Illuminati and all that. And they're all into evil things, both parties, especially in the bureaucracies and especially the higher ranks of the political parties. We know that. But the people at the grassroots level, the one thing I can say about Republicans is, and I'm a recovering Republican, don't hold it against me, folks. I voted for George Bush the Elder, okay? Lizard Boy himself. So I'm coming from some background experience here. But the Republicans stand for, generally, limited government. They stand for a strong military, not necessarily an interventionist military, but a strong military. Constitutional values, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a solid core, Judy, of military people that are for the Constitution. Now, if they, the controllers, manipulate things, so we get into a wider war with Iran/China, right? That's going to be bad because what they're going to do is, and they're already moving these aircraft carrier battle groups to, contest the Chinese, et cetera, et cetera. If it turns into a wider war, that means that all these people, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, that could have stayed home, could have defended the Republic, could have defended America, once again, they're going to be shunted off to the other side of the world to fight and perchance die. And so that will be not only a huge distraction, but that will materially weaken the ability of Americans in general to resist this Marxist, cultural Marxist, demonic invasion from within. Mm. Because the problem that Trump or anyone else would have, right? Let's say for the sake of argument that Trump really wants to turn this thing around. He has built-in problems. His son-in-law, Jared Kushner, there's no telling. Kushner probably staffed the White House and all the key administrative posts with his people, right? So even if Trump comes up with the greatest idea, and I'm not necessarily a Trump fan, I'm just thinking of someone from a perspective of a former Republican who's a constitutionalist and believes in libertarian principles. Let's say for the sake of argument, Trump wants to do good things, wants to nip this insurrection in the bud, is what it is, an insurrection. Because of Kushner staffing the White House and key bureaucracies with his people, Trump may be met with bureaucratic inertia and outright interference. So he cannot do, or the people around him that want to do what's right and prevent this communist takeover from taking place, they may be prevented. And it goes down to the grassroots level, Judith. That's the problem. Okay, so you have these mayors that are communists. You have these police chiefs. The kneeling down of the police chiefs, that's a Freemasonic thing, saying, yes, we're all aboard. We're in this. We're all part of this takeover. So, and also the district attorneys, the federal district attorneys. In the past, the federal district attorneys were used to cover up crimes. MENA, Arkansas, with Jeffrey Epstein, the district attorney, federal district attorney, turned a blind eye, made a sweetheart deal. Those are just two examples. What I would like to see is for Trump or somebody to ensure that those federal district attorneys, state's attorneys, are loyal to the Constitution. Get rid of those who are not on board. Replace them with constitutionalists. So when the district attorney, when the local magistrates say, oh, this woman who tried to, escape from this screaming mob, and she accidentally drove over one of these Antifa types in her escape, instead of letting the local authorities throw her in jail, it would be nice if the federal district attorney could say, nope, I'm stepping in. Just like we stepped in at MENA, Arkansas, and stepped in these other places and quashed or cover up these investigations. Now we're stepping in for the Constitution, right? Mm-hmm. I would like to see that happen. And also the fact that countless Americans, they're starting now to form groups where they're banding together with arms, and they're saying, you Antifa types, you're not coming to our communities, you're not coming to our towns, you're not going to wreak havoc. Okay, so we're already seeing that. So I think that as America stands or falls, I think the greater world will stand or fall. Because once America regains its constitutional footing, the core, the root of this is so deep, as you know, especially the control of the mega banking cartel, which have already assassinated all these past American presidents. Okay, let's not forget how powerful they are. They've got their work. We've got our work cut out for us on this planet, because otherwise it can turn into a draconian Orion hell. The kind of wars that were like exported from the Orion Wars millions of years ago, they've made it to our fine shores. The ancient Babylon Orion traditions are coming to the fore. They're being normalized. That's what these wars have been all about throughout ages.
Speaking about the Orion Wars, and are you familiar with the work of Randy Green?
No, I'm not. No? Please enlighten me.
She has quite an interesting point of view. She has written interesting books, Souls of Humanity, and the other one slips my mind now. Well, anyhow, she explained in her video, in one of her videos, that the New World Order is already here. It came in when Trump was inaugurated, and that was symbolized by all the Marines walking behind him. You remember that?
Yeah.
So, okay. And then later on, she explained that under the old world order, it was not permitted to, let's say, I live in Germany. When I leave my country, because here I'm under a specific jurisdiction depending on who's running the show here. So, meaning, if I leave my country voluntarily, I am no longer under any jurisdiction. I'm open prey. And that was one of the reasons why they invented tourism. So, but under the old world order, like them or not, I'm not saying they were wonderful, of course not, but under that order, it was not permitted to harvest on a higher dimensional level, to harvest the genetics and the templates and whatever. But since Trump came in, that has been permitted. And that is why some of the factions came up with the idea, we cannot allow that, we will lock them down. We will lock them down so that as much as possible, everybody stays in his or her own country. What do you make of that?
I've been thinking about similar things just within Australia and within America, how they've tightened up border restrictions just between the states. So let's say that an active armed covert, let's say, resistance were to get going in America. It would be difficult to coordinate that if the state borders were closed. It would be difficult to coordinate that if people in one state couldn't go to another state. They would have to use sub rosa means. They would have to utilize skills perhaps they learned in the military, special operations, that kind of thing. There's covert means of doing all this, but the will has to be there. So that problem is magnified internationally, where there's only so many ports of entry. Unless one has their own yacht or boat, which they can take off and go from one country to another, and they're still going to use, because old school seafaring navigation isn't taught anymore, unless someone has taken the time to learn ocean navigation by the stars and whatnot, they're going to be reliant upon GPS, which means they're going to be traceable. And then you have all these transponders that are sent out on board these vessels. It's like a black operation, Judith. If one wants to go, you know, infiltrate another country in whatever conveyance, a vehicle, a road vehicle, a plane, a helicopter, or a boat, it's got to be done clandestinely. It's got to be done under the radar. And that's going to increase the difficulty. So when people try to go from one country to another, there's so many checkpoints. There's so many means of tracking and surveilling them. And then they're going to have to explain, what are you doing here? You're supposed to be over there. And there's a worldwide lockdown. So, yes, I would see that this was carefully thought out to, and only a pandemic or the threat of a pandemic could have created the conditions, the justifications necessary to make all these restrictions globally possible. And also the compliant media, which is not compliant, they're part of it. Without them, to the steady drumbeat of misinformation over and over, it's so Orwellian. It's equal parts of They Live and Idiocracy, if your viewers had ever seen those two movies. That's what's going on now.
That's a documentary.
Yeah.
So she went on to explain that we will have some meteor showers, especially one in October from the, I guess that is from the Orion system. And she said that what we call meteor showers is actually solidified debris of the original wars, meaning crafts, genetics, technology, what have you. And that is coming down and is having an impact on the consciousness of people as well. Can you see that, or would you say that is woo-woo?
Well, from the standpoint of meteorites, I haven't heard that theory. But from what I understand, I am satisfied there is another, lack of a better term, mini solar system in our solar system. Call it the red dwarf, the brown dwarf, whatever the case may be. There is another star in our solar system which has its own solar system, planetary bodies, and moons around it. And I've seen this at 35,000 feet. on board an airplane. I've seen the Red Dwarf anyway, and I've seen it on the ground. And I've seen a lot of very persuasive videos from surf cams, especially in Australia, but they've all been taken down. The website that had all the surf cams that were pointing in the right direction that would show this second sun, usually in the morning or in the late evening, late afternoon. And they cleverly utilized the chemtrails to obscure this too. They would put the chemtrails in particular places to make it difficult for people on the ground to detect. So the point of relevance is this mini solar system has its own debris trail. As it moves into and eventually out of our solar system, it's trailing a gigantic asteroid meteor field. And all over the world, bolides, meteorites are coming down. Some of them are making a huge explosion when they enter the atmosphere. So as time goes on, we're going to be seeing more and more meteorite strikes. And also, the seismic activity all over the world has increased. And I believe it's not just man-made seismic weaponry that's behind this. To a degree, I would say yes. They absolutely have the means to create an earthquake in Tehran or anywhere else they want. They've done this before. But a lot of the volcanic eruptions, a lot of the seismic activity, I feel, is due to this mini solar system. And also, the Earth's tilt has radically changed. The Inuit Eskimos, amongst others in the Arctic Circle, have been saying for years now that the sunset and sunrise are in different parts of the sky. So they're noticing, and others have noticed. I have friends that live in a place in the country where they have trees, they have lakes and everything, and they've said that for years the sun would rise in this part of the sky between these two trees, for example. Now it's rising over here. So the Earth's axial tilt has changed as a result of the gravitational effects of this mini solar system. And I think that this mini solar system has created a celestial timetable. I've talked about this before, but it bears repeating. The controllers, the would-be controllers of this planet, and by extension the solar system, they know the celestially driven timetable. They know that in the past, these celestially driven cataclysmic events have totally done a reset on the surface of the world. Mass animal extinctions, and in the geologic record, mass upheavals of the land. So this happens between every 9,000-12,000 years, and it lasts for a while too. And we're on the cusp of those coming back again. Hence the desire of these controllers to get everything in place before this reset occurs again. So I think that it's all going on. By the time 2022 and 2025 roll around, this place, you know, geopolitically, may look very different, this planet.
I have interviewed Pierre Sabak now twice.
Please introduce me to him. I'd love to have him on my show.
Oh, really? Yeah. Yeah. I can do that. And so at one point I asked him and said, is it fair to say that these seraphim alien races are running planet Earth as their personal enterprise? And he said, yes, it's fair to say that. And I, for one, I'm pretty tired of that. Because, you know, and that has been pretty clear to me for quite a while. And I was just, you know, asking Pierre to get a confirmation. So are you tired of it being the punching ball?
You mean this draconian reptilian terrarium is what it amounts to, essentially, where we're a louche factory, where our emotions and everything from our DNA and is being harvested, and the potential exists for this to be a recycling center, you know, the Saturn moon matrix recycling center, where after these celestially driven cataclysms and the culling of the population is already underway with processed food and everything else, and that the potential exists that if we don't break out of this, that en masse will just come back as slaves again. Yes, I'm thoroughly fed up with that. And I'm glad you brought that up too, because you and I know that this whole construct of control is non-human in nature. Mm-hmm. This meme that's been going out for some time now, this Project Bluebeam meme, which wasn't even a real project. It was something that somebody threw the term out, Project Bluebeam, a fake alien invasion. Now, I've talked to people in the aerospace community. I've talked to people. I had a discussion with a forest science advisor when I worked at Commander Naval Air Force's U.S. Pacific Fleet. And they frequently use the term blue to denote some kind of high-level, spooky, weird science program. Like the forest science advisor said, oh yeah, these blue sky projects. We got talking about advanced projects with DARPA and other advanced R&D centers. So the term blue has always been used within the aerospace intelligence community to denote something of a high-level, spooky, weird science nature. So someone comes along and says, oh, Bluebeam, Project Bluebeam, this is a fake alien invasion. Well, first of all, yes, the blue avians. Well, first of all, that's putting the cart before the horse, because the leaders of this world are the hybrid, reptilian hybrid plantation managers. Some of them are literally shapeshifters. They're not human. They look, for the average person, they look human. For me, I know what physical energetic characteristics to look for and say, that person's a reptilian, that person's not a human. So to say that Project Bluebeam is a fake alien invasion that they may utilize in the future to assert total control, that's like putting the cart before the horse, because aliens already control this place. Point one.
Exactly.
Point two is nothing is off the table. If the evil aliens that run this planet want to, say, forestall intervention by hypothetically good aliens that are coming, what better way to make everyone freak out and go against the good aliens by claiming a fake alien invasion? Now, the thing about that is, everything is fake here anyway. The media is fake. The food is fake. The medicine and the science is fake. So to me, a quote unquote fake alien invasion is par for the course. That's what goes on here, right? Mm. So, but it's gotten to the point now, and I don't want to say it's irritating. I think it's mildly amusing. All these so-called truthers who would never go into some of the surface level directions you and I go, Judith. Mm. You know, when we talk about what's really going on this planet.
Yeah.
Every time a video now comes up of UFOs, oh, Project Bluebeam, it's like this program, they don't even realize it's a program response. Not one of these people chirping about Project Bluebeam can give me the basic essentials of some of the great UFO cases in history. Captain Thomas Mantell dying when he's being vectored towards a giant UFO, 1948. Felix Monclaw flying a jet fighter over Lake Superior. Radar operators saw his plane merge with the UFO blip, and then the blip disappeared along with his plane, right? And those are just two classic cases. They wouldn't know any of that. Mm-hmm. They haven't studied all the available information that's out there. They've been programmed no different than all these people programmed in the schools and the cultural Marxism that's going on. They've been programmed to have a negative, essentially fear-based response to the whole concept of aliens and non-human life forms, which is what makes the control system so effective. Because, and there's some built-in incongruities to that too, Judith, because when some of these surface-level truthers really delve into it, at least on the surface, they know that a lot of these so-called leaders are hardcore Luciferians. Cannibals. They're not really cannibals because they're not really humans from my perspective. But you know, that all that stuff, they're aware that they pray and worship Moloch and these ancient pagan deities, but the coin doesn't drop. Why are they doing that? They don't know that there's a genetic aspect to that, a spiritual aspect, extraterrestrial and a hyperdimensional aspect to that. They're not worshiping other humans. They're too egotistical for that. They're worshiping and communing and getting power from other beings, right? Now, the religious slant would be, oh, they're all just demons. And I say, yeah, demons don't need spaceships to, or, you know, like what crashed in Roswell wasn't a demon ship. That was a spaceship. Okay?
But James, so, there is no space.
Well, because that's the confusion thing, Judith, because every confusion is a psyop technique. We get it from the flat earthers. We get it from the moon doesn't exist. Oh, if the moon exists, it's only 1,000 feet up. We've been lied to about that, right? So, and the problem with a lot of these truthers is they're click and share, click and share, click and share. They don't do their own research. Okay. Mm. Anyone who studied covert military operations knows that at a time when Eisenhower banned surveillance flights over the North Pole, over the Arctic Circle, people like General Curtis LeMay were ordering on their own surveillance flights over the Arctic Circle. The whole covert infrastructure, apart from the main U.S. government military, was set up to allow, you know, these flights from North America over the Arctic Circle into the USSR. Mm. And then there's countless examples of, like, when the atomic bomb was dropped, and now they're saying, oh, nuclear weapons don't exist, that's a hoax too. Mm. Yeah. When the Enola Gay was flying away from Hiroshima, they saw the mushroom cloud over 160 miles away as they were departing. The only reason they lost sight of it, because that mushroom cloud went over 60,000 feet in the air. The only reason they lost sight of it was the curvature of the earth, right? Mm-hmm. So now we have all these flat earthers and they're everywhere, and it's more and more because they don't study real history. And frankly, a lot of them, Judith, they have no real world experience. Mm-hmm. Not only have they not studied the real information, they haven't been around or been involved in real intelligence work or been around real aerospace intelligence people. Mm. Military intelligence, covert operations. They've never met any of those people in the flesh. Mm. So they don't know, you know, the information that they have, and they wouldn't know what questions to ask in the first place. I'm sorry, I'm getting a little, like, you know, irritated by the whole thing, you know.
But I understand what you mean. So coming back to Randy Green, I would say she blew out the entire narrative that the benevolent aliens would intervene here. She blew that out of the water and said that's literally not possible, because the frequency that is here, this low energy vibration, they cannot exist here. So unless they go into a human body and do it that way, but that is a hassle and nobody wants to do that. And so, yeah, end of story. No aliens coming to save us.
Yeah, that's why so many people with a higher dimensional alien soul have reincarnated as boots on the ground. Mm. That's what's happened for many people. And some of those people were suborned, wound up becoming New Agers through all the trauma that they've carried with them and had to work through. But many people are consciously aware that they're here, assignment Earth, let's say. Mm. But there's something to her argument that if these higher dimensional beings are here, they would have to be able to work through and around these built-in limitations, right? Because just driving around where I live, I'm noticing, I'm eyeballing new 5G towers everywhere. I mean, in places I didn't see them before. Now overnight, well, you know, we haven't been doing much driving because of the restrictions, right? But, you know, as these restrictions ease and we drive around a little more, gee, I didn't notice that huge tower there. Mm. These big unsightly towers, and they're not that far apart from each other, Judith. Mm. They're relatively close to one another, and they're popping up everywhere. So point of relevance is, that's going to drive the frequency bandwidth even lower. And the whole intention, I feel, is not only to sicken us and sicken all life forms, right? Bacteria and, you know, cells from plants and everything else, but to drive down the energetic frequency bandwidth to make it easier and easier for these malevolent entities, let's say, from other dimensions and other worlds to get here. They're making it easier for beings of a negative parasitic nature to come in, and making it more difficult for beings that of a higher vibrational nature to get here. Now, there are other ways they can work around that. Mm-hmm. They don't necessarily have to come into our atmosphere. They can kind of park above it and around it elsewhere in the solar system, kind of, you know, do covert operations that way. So again, they're going to have to work through these limitations and these hindrances, let's say, but nothing is impossible. I'm not going to hang my hat on these, you know, good aliens coming to the rescue, like the cavalry, cowboy Indian movies, right? I'm not going to say that because we have our work cut out for us here. I like to think that just as the United States Marine Corps had this ethos of never leaving your people behind, living or dead, I like to think, and maybe I'm just whistling past the graveyard, but I like to think that, you know, our higher dimensional counterparts who know what's going on, who've in some measure, we had a choice in this too, sent us here, right, to begin the cycle of reincarnation over and over and over to the point we're at now. I like to think that maybe they're doing something about it, but I'm not going to hang my hat on it. You know what I mean? It's a tough assignment Earth. And, you know, those of us that are on the ground, it's too late to opt out. We're here. We have to make the best of it. And I would like to add that it's always darkest before the dawn. Okay, the cliches are coming thick and fast now, but it's, if you're going to be anywhere in the cosmos where you can make a difference just by anchoring higher frequency vibrations and, you know, developing the mental hygiene to block out all thoughts of defeat, of negativity, of hopelessness, this is the place to be. And every one of your listeners is making a difference if they just choose to, right? It's easy to fall into the constant harassment from the media about how hopeless and how stupid everything is. But that's why we came here, quite frankly, to change this.
Mm. Yeah. And I certainly will not hang my hat on QAnon.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of talk about that. And the thing about it is, it's possible that a lot of his original messages were distorted and amplified by others, adding their own interpretation, adding their own thoughts. But again, you know, for the boots on the ground, it may be a means to say, look, it's not all hopeless. There's a plan in the works, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But that is presupposing that Donald Trump and those around him are actually free agents that are actually capable, even if they wanted to make all these necessary changes. What we're seeing is a Bolshevik Red Terror uprising in not only America, but in the Western world. When you have so many mayors, so many police chiefs, so many, the media, all complicit in enforcing all of this stuff, that's planetary. It's anti-human. It's anti-human. So to say that, you know, a few people in the administration can fix all of this, that's a tall order, if you ask me.
Yeah. I just did an interview with Masaki Miyagawa.
Good old Masaki.
Yeah, and it's titled Assignment Earth Sucks Right Now. And I will not come back. I have had it. This is my last round. I will do my best. And then this is it. No more. This is it. There are so many thick heads here that cannot think logically. I don't know. I have had it.
Well, you notice also in the first wave of COVID restrictions, right? It revealed the inner vulnerability and the inner working of a lot of people that we thought should know better, Judith. There's a lot of people, so-called truthers, oh, keep your social distancing. Oh, no, we shouldn't be driving around. Oh, no. It was like confronted with their own mortality, this notion that we're all going to die in this mass mega plague, right? Suddenly, these people that you thought should have known better, they just rolled right over and went along with the narrative. And then these other people, and then you add on top of that, these other people who should have known the divide and conquer thing, who should have, because they didn't do history. They didn't know what the Red Terror was. They didn't know about the Ukraine famine, et cetera, et cetera. They're right on board with this Black Lives Matter. And then they're just ready to jump on anyone who disputes that narrative, right? So these people that you thought should know better, their real core personality has come to the fore. Mm. And it's created divisions, and I think these divisions needed to happen, right? Because, like, from my personal perspective, whether it's acquaintances, friends, or family, if they're so utterly brainwashed that they're a tool of the system, it's, I'll be cordial to them on the odd occasion, I'll interact with them, but it's to the point now where if they ask me my opinion about this, that, or the other, knowing they come from a perspective of total brainwashing, where they don't even have an independent thought of their own, literally. I'll just change the subject. I'll talk about sports. I'll talk about flowers. I'll talk about butterflies or like apples or something, because it's just going to irritate me, because everything I say is what they've done, Judith, is what I've noticed being a reptilian alien abduction investigator is, whether I'm talking to a small group of people privately or an individual or to a large audience in a lecture, when I start raising certain issues, the programming kicks in some of these people. See, to use a computer term, Judith, we all have these plugins. Mm. Through, you know, generations and generations of genetic manipulation or contact hyperdimensional manipulation, just as if we have receptors for opioids and THC and opioids for this, receptors for this, that, or the other in our brains, we have these plugins, for lack of a better term. And when I start talking about reptilian abductions, I see this reaction immediately in certain people. Some fall asleep just like that. Can't wake them up. They're just out. Other people get visibly agitated, visibly angry, even argumentative. Mm. Other people, you know, they get so shaken up, they have to get up and leave. Smoke a cigarette, do something, but they have to leave the premises. Now keep that point in mind, because the cultural Marxist socialist indoctrination is such that it shunts people, because of these plugins, these archontic plugins, into that part of the brain and that part of their energetic makeup. Mm-hmm. So when I start talking about things just on a surface level that these social justice warriors never heard before, because they've just been trained everything is an emotional response, and they think they know everything because the ego has been activated. When I talk about the larger picture of global control, et cetera, because of the manipulation that these social justice warriors have been under, very similar, in fact, two sides of the same coin that the aliens do to these people who get up and walk out of my lectures. When you raise these very basic issues with these social justice warriors, you get anger. You get outright hostility. Instead of the very human response of curiosity, never heard of that from. Where did you get that from? Could you direct me to a book or to a website? I'd like to know more. No, it's just outright hostility, right? Yeah. So they've removed logic and rationality and reasoned debate out of the equation and shunted it into this highly emotional response mode, which is our complex reptilian. The same thing I've seen when people get agitated and upset when I talk about these reptilian issues on a larger scale, just raising issues about the global control of the banking system, covert operations, and mass mind control. It triggers the hell out of these social justice warriors, who are the useful idiots that are necessary to stifle discussion, stifle debate on social media. Because too many people still have idiots on their friends list. Me, not so much. Somebody pops up and makes this dissenting voice. Mm. It's okay for them to squelch dissent. It's okay for them to take away people's freedom of speech. But we're supposed to, you know, take the higher road, and we're supposed to, everyone has, you know, because we're all equal. Mm. And we're just supposed to let them just walk all over us on our own social media. No, I don't play that game. They're out. And so the point of relevance is, when in a personal personal relationship setting with family, friends, or acquaintances, I don't get drawn into these discussions. Because at this point, Judith, if they haven't woken up at this point by now.
Yeah, it's too late.
These are what I call hopeless cases. They're Agent Smiths. They're Matrix Sentinels. It's not my job to wake them up, right? Mm. It's the information is out there, right? So as a result, I've gone more inward, more insular. I only network with people like you and I, right? Mm. And everyone else, I keep at arm's length. I want everyone else to think I'm just like them, mm. right? You know, I'm immersed in the Matrix, chewing my cud, not knowing any better. You know why? Because they don't have a need to know. They don't have clearance. I'm the one who gives security clearance to others so they can know more about me. And mm. I don't give that security clearance willy-nilly. They have to earn the right. You know what I mean? And that's what people are going to have to do also. In the same way that communist subversion works in cells, the people that are against all of this will have to start working in cells. They'll have to start developing covert means of communication. And this is going to take a lot of work because everyone's conditioned to how handy the digital devices and the mobile phones are. People are going to have to learn to communicate in a way that's not traceable or trackable. Because to some degree, many people are already on a watch list. Many people are already under surveillance. As a my lab and having gone through alien abductions and military abductions, there's no telling how many different agencies are, interested in me, right? But the point of relevance is people are going to have to start working in cells and only trust those and let in your inner circle those who you absolutely trust. Because when push comes to shove, when the famine kicks in, et cetera, all these people around us, they'll just turn on us. That's how this is, that's how communism works.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. James, I will finish here because in 20 minutes I have another interview. I'm doing a marathon today.
Thank you for having me on. Sorry for all the disruptions and all the delays. I'm sorry about that.
That happens. I have it sometimes with certain guests. I experience a lot of interferences. And that is why I never go live, because I never know what's going to happen. Yeah. But I thank you so much for coming. I would like to continue this conversation. Maybe I can come on to your show or you.
Yes, please do so, please.
Yeah. Just let me know and we will make it happen.
Thank you, Judith.
So that was it. Night Flight for today with the lovely James Bartley. And we see you all next time. Stay safe and sound out there and keep it up. Bye-bye.